Shut up! The footy's on Triple M!
This is a Triple M footy news update.
This is massive, this story, but a little exclusive.
With Tom Brown.
Well, the trade period is officially over, but this man never sleeps. His iPhone 6, flames coming off it. There was smoke coming off it, Tom Brown. Congrats on all your work in the trade period. But as you know, the footy news period never sleeps. And particularly this time of year, there's a lot of delistings and contract news. What have you got for us in terms of contract news? Let's start with Phil Davis up at the Giants, mate.
I'll start with Phil Davis. Good morning, Rabs, this morning. Good morning to our listeners. Phil Davis, I understand, will get an extra year extension on his contract. He's 31. He only managed 11 games this year. There's been some conjecture as to whether, I guess, he's in their best 22. He thinks he's in their best 22. But he will get an extra year, and he's not retiring at the Giants, is my understanding. I think his management, TLA, and the Giants are working through that at the moment, and I don't think an announcement would be far off.
That's some good news for Giants fans there. But what about Marty Gleeson? He was delisted from Essendon. He was a much-loved player at the club. Is there any interest in Marty Gleeson following his delisting from the Bombers?
Yeah, I'm told this morning there is from another list expert, but I don't know which club yet. But I expect there would be some interest in Gleeson and also Braden Sire, who was delisted by the Pies yesterday. You know, Sire's only managed, I think, 30 or so games in his career, including a grand final, of course. And the most famous incident he was involved in was the infamous Phil-In incident, wasn't it?
Yes,
Raspberry played basketball under a pseudonym Phil-In during their injury crisis in 2019. He's played 28 games since debuting in 2018. So I expect there might be some interest in Sire, but I do think there will definitely be interest in Gleeson.
And what about Charlie Constable, mate? I mean, it's not on your list here, but Charlie Constable's an interesting one, being delisted by the Cats. Do you reckon he'll get interest from other clubs?
I haven't got any visibility on that yet. I mean, the difficulty at the Cats, of course, as Stephen Wells referred to their list boss the other night, is that, you know, with their age profile, it's hard to get a game. So other clubs will be looking at any of Geelong's delistings in particular, those younger guys, and working out whether they could fit.
A lot of news around the trade period, mate, was around one club being the Hawks. What's the fallout? Do you see any fallout from the trade period and, you know, particularly shopping around three or four senior players that eventually have stayed at the club?
Yeah, there could be big fallout from Hawthorn. I mean, it doesn't look like Sam Mitchell's off to the best start as coach. I mean, in terms of the facts from the trade period, they didn't, Hawthorn, advance up the draft order like they'd intended by offering up players. Bruce came up late. You always worry when such a senior, respected player at his age comes up on the last day of trade period. He didn't want to go to the Giants. Bruce, Gunston, Wingard, Mitchell and O'Meara, Hawthorn were all open to trades in respect of those players. They're their gun players. They didn't end up going. You know, my understanding was that Sam Mitchell did speak to senior coaches, and whilst perhaps he didn't specifically mention players, you know, I do hear that the word over 26 in terms of age was mentioned, and they'd be open to those offers. And, you know, and the fact is the Giants indicator, Jason McCartney speaking to us on 7 News post-trade period, I think he reiterated yesterday, you know, Hawthorn would have helped pay for Wingard and Bruce to go to the Giants. It's just a fact. And I asked Hawthorn about that yesterday, and they certainly didn't deny it during their press conference. So they're the sort of facts, I guess, coming out of Hawthorn's trade period. It creates debate now about, you know, whether it's been a success or not. Their position, Rabs, I can report this morning, is a bit different. You know, sources at Hawthorn have explained to me that Hawthorn went to clubs and basically said, look, if you make us an offer in respect of players and it's a good offer, we're prepared to be very open, considerate, and we'll put it to the player, and it's up to the player. In regards to why Hawthorn didn't jump on the front foot and anticipate this back in July or August, I anticipate trading out one of these players and getting a good pick. They could have gone to one of the top agents. They didn't do that. You know, Hawthorn told me, well, they just didn't want to put players actively on the table. That was never their intention. In terms of whether there's any bad blood between Sam Mitchell and the players, Hawthorn assured me there's not. He's getting on well with his players. There was good communication with the players. And they say evidence is the pictures we've seen on the news lately. Mitchell's out every day at Waverley walking his dogs with the players. I know it's a funny example, but I must say, you know, if he was not getting on with Mitchell or those guys, I don't reckon they'd be walking their dogs together.
I think one of the positives, mate, out of this whole thing is that they had players like Bruce and Wingard who wanted to stay at the club.
I couldn't agree more, and that's Hawthorne's point. They said, well, Wingard and Bruce ended up staying for less. They would have got more money if they went to the Giants. They would have got more security for the Giants. They said, no, we believe in the Hawthorn program. So from Hawthorn's perspective, they've got a bit of an alternate take on whether it's been a mini disaster or not. They see it differently.
Jeff Kennett, during the trade period early on, sent out an email forecasting some potential moves that evidently didn't happen. And there's also now, you know, word of almost a board coup. What have you heard about this, about ousting Jeff Kennett from the Hawks?
Yeah, there's mounting pressure on Jeff Kennett. I use those words cautiously because he's still got very much control of his board, and I would never underestimate Jeff. He's very hard to unseat. He doesn't suffer fools.
I love it
he's
when
not,
you do,
and he's
Jeff
not
Kennett.
Worried about any of this. He's like, bring it on. You know, he's fine. I spoke to him yesterday. But just to explain, there's a website now, hawksforchange.org, which has been set up by a Coterie group. It's supported by Bruce Stevenson and Jamie Morrison, both former premiership players. There's that group, and those two players support two independents running for the board. They're not Jeff Kennett's nominees. They're two alternative people. The Coterie groups are essentially upset about the fact that Hawthorne's paying Clarko $1 million next year not to coach. So there's a group of Coteries like, well, hang on, we throw in all this money. You know, the best coaches, you know, squatting around America, probably in business class, probably at Hawthorne's expense, you know, going to other, learning about other sports and other clubs and getting paid by someone associated with the Tasmanian push. He's got a 6-month contract now to assist the Tasmanian push, Alistair Clarkson, which we learned yesterday. So the Coterie groups are upset about that. They're also upset about, I think, Stevenson and Morrison have voiced concern in regards to Hawthorne's community programs. I spoke to Jeff Kennett yesterday. He thinks this is related to the Pokies. Morrison's been pushing for Hawthorne to sell the Pokies. Jeff's like, well, I'm not doing that in the middle of a pandemic. It's the worst time to do it. We'd lose money comparatively. So he's not selling one of their most valuable assets just at the minute, although he told me he will at the appropriate time. He thinks it's related to Labor. He's obviously got this mouthpiece at the moment where he's critical of the state Labor government here in Victoria regarding COVID. And one of the people associated with this change group apparently used to work for Steve Brack, so he thinks it's a bit of a Labor versus Liberal thing. And he reckons that Hawthorne's got a huge political, and he reckons that there's a community aspect. In regards to the community stuff, he reckons that they couldn't be doing any more. They've got a blind team, a wheelchair, a disabled team, women's teams, all the various, you know, they're fully covered in terms of all the from a community perspective. So he thinks there's no issues there. How serious is this push? Not very at the moment, but it could get more serious because I think they see it, these Coterie groups, as a sustained campaign. They want it to go for at least 12 months, and they want to get more board seats next year too. So it could become interesting over the next 12 months.
Very interesting, Tommy. We mentioned off the top, obviously, that the trade period has officially finished as of Wednesday night. Is there any fallout you can see post-trade period? Let's start with Bobby Hill not getting his move to Essendon. And I think you mentioned that the Pies were very interested, but he still finds himself as a Giants player.
Yeah, Graham Wright spoke yesterday from Collingwood and explained they did meet with Hill last Friday, and I reported and they essentially confirmed in the dying stages of trade period, Collingwood did offer I think it was pick 27 and a third round selection for Hill. So they had a pretty serious crack. But it's up to the Giants now to try and placate Hill, and that's all sort of calmed down, I guess. They've stuck to their guns. I know there's, you know, a lot of people say, well, if the Giants were receptive to Hill's, you know, interest, they would have let him trade. But, I mean, there's two sides to that story, aren't there? I mean, I know that he's got family in Victoria, he's got a pregnant partner, and he wanted more support. But at the same time, you know, the Giants entered into a contract with Hill. There's a year to go under that contract. They're worried about missing Toby Green, particularly in the first five rounds. And Hill entered into that contract with his eyes wide open. There was no power imbalance when he negotiated that deal. I mean, he did it between he's represented by Colin Young, who's one of the top agents, and the Giants are like, well, we want you to perform your contract. So it's a good old debate in football that came up, obviously, regarding Joe Danaher. It's come up with Bobby Hill about the way clubs treat contracted players. Sydney, Charlie Gardner spoke yesterday in regards to Dawson's move to Adelaide. The Swans felt they were a bit jammed in that deal because he wasn't an unrestricted – he wasn't a free agent, but he wasn't contracted either. And Adelaide sort of offered a bit of a take-it-or-leave-it approach. And Sydney reckoned there was a bit of an imbalance in that negotiation, but I don't think much will come from that.
And they're asking the AFL, I read this morning, to have a look at how the preseason draft works, the Swans. So they're really not happy with how Dawson found his way to the Crows.
No, I mentioned that on our podcast on Wednesday. I mean, they think there should be some rule change in regards to this. The rule, Rabs, you know, in essence, is that the player's uncontracted and you can't reach an agreement with another club. Another club can walk them into the preseason draft. The reason for that was because the AFL and the lawyers didn't want there to be an unreasonable restraint of trade and an argument against the legality of the draft. That's why that rule exists. So I don't think the AFL would change it, but I know Sydney's influential at the AFL table and they'll raise those issues with the AFL. They think it's a bit of a grey area because their preseason draft rule predicated or came before the current trading rules, and they think it's a bit skew-whiff because they put a lot of work into Dawson over 4, 5, or 6 years, and they think they haven't been fairly compensated.
Before we move on from player ins and outs, mate, I know you mentioned on Wednesday, so Tyson Stengel will definitely go to the Cats.
It looks that way. I asked Stephen Wells about that post-trade period, and I think they're still working through that deal, but I think through one of the mechanisms on the list that will happen.
Brilliant, mate. And one last one, vaccination. We've seen in the NBA it's become a big issue with Kyrie Irving voicing that he doesn't want to be vaccinated. Where does the AFL and the AFLPA sit on vaccination heading into season 2022?
So the AFL hasn't finalised its vaccination policy formally yet because they're obviously all the states are different and all the governments are different. So they're trying to work on their national policy. I think they'll announce something probably next week or the following week, but they're just taking their time. The crux of the issue is this. Today is the first date with which you have to have the first vaccination in Victoria, or at least a booking to get the first vaccination. I spoke to the AFL at length yesterday. They do acknowledge there's a handful of players or a few or staff at clubs at the moment that aren't vaccinated. They're working through those issues with those people. I think we'll get better visibility on this today or even on Monday. It's particularly an issue for the AFLW at the moment because those players are training. I spoke to a player agent offline yesterday, prominent in AFLW, that alluded to the fact that perhaps a few players are reluctant. They wouldn't talk specifics or wouldn't comment on the record. They're hoping to twist their arm overnight so it doesn't become an issue. But the clear message from the AFL is they have to comply with the Victorian government guidelines. Any staff or players that arrive at clubs today that aren't vaxxed, obviously from AFL men or AFLW, or don't have an appointment, can't come to the club. It's pretty clear. So I expect that I don't think it'll become a big issue, but I think it's got the potential to become a significant talking point.
All right, mate. And before I let you go, the most important question that I'm going to ask you on this podcast in this year, what does the summer of Tom Brown look, mate? Have you dusted off the boat shoes and the shorts? Are you heading down to Portsea Way? Or what are you going to do with your time off, mate?
Like the summer of Tom Brown at the moment, so, you know, I've just got 10 days off post my Perth trip. So I'm going to drive Tara mad. Usually we hit the road and go down the coast or something and go up to Sydney. We can't. So I'm going to do jobs around the house and try and get organised, chase up on a few expenses, you know, just do a few jobs. And and then I'll try and play some golf at some point in time, as long as we can play within 15 Ks of home. I haven't quite got my head around that issue. And then eventually I'll take some time off.
Beauty, mate. Well, look after yourself. You've been terrific.
On Henry Mad, Rabs.
Yeah. You've been terrific on Triple M this year, mate. Thanks for everything you've done. And good luck with the summer of Tom Brown.
Thanks, Rabs. So do you.
Shut up. The footy's on Triple M.
Triple M rocks footy.